Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
To you from the Carter Subaru Studio, welcome to our top stories this hour. And I don't know if there's any story more top, but I didn't really hear the details. Aaron, did you by any chance hear about these new Girl Scout cookies?
Yeah, it's called the Raspberry Rally. It's a thin mint, but a little raspberry infusion in the middle there. So the same chocolate outer, and then a little red raspberry mint combo in the middle.
I really don't like fruit in my cookies.
No.
Hot take. No, I'm with you. I agree.
Like the thin mints, they're just the ones that have the, like, pepperminty.
They're the best.
You don't need to mess with that.
No, if it ain't broke. And they're the best when they're frozen.
Yeah.
In the freezer, and then you crumble them up and put them over
I'm sorry. What's the first process in making them frozen?
You put them in, there's this thing called a freezer.
They freeze them in the freezer.
Yeah.
Okay. No, it sounds delightful, but yeah, no, the raspberry thing, we don't need that.
I was looking it up. I guess there's like a raspberry mint julep drink, so that sounds good.
We see, I'm a girly drinker when I drink.
Well, you are.
Yeah.
Everything has raspberry in your drinks. That's true.
Raspberry.
Well, I know, but that's usually
Has cranberry and pineapple juice.
Or that. Okay, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
It's berries.
But yeah, I mean, I go out with people. I go out with manly drinkers who drink manly drinks. And then I have my little girly drinks.
I know. You usually ask, what kind of flavored vodka do you have?
Yeah. Yes. So, okay. So anyway.
I was looking a little closer here.
Oh, good.
By
Thank
the way.
Goodness.
All right. Yeah. This is important news. So the new cookie, I'm reading this article now, will still be dipped in the same chocolate coating, but I guess instead of mint.
What?
Okay, this is huge. Instead of mint, the new cookie will be infused with a raspberry flavor. So my apologies, no mint flavor, only raspberry and chocolate. I'm cool with the cookie now.
But wait, they're removing the good and they're inserting the bad.
Good. It's like chocolate-covered raspberries now.
You know, although I will say, one of the best parts of COVID, and by the way, you don't hear too many things start with that sentence. One of the best parts of COVID is not having to deal with coworkers whose children are selling Girl Scout cookies. That's always been a
pain
in the
butt. We still got emails.
Did we?
I think so. I think we got one.
That shouldn't be allowed.
I don't know. The Girl Scout cookies are the only ones I don't mind. It's chocolate bars that drive me crazy.
But let the kids go and sell it. Let them stand in the rain outside the grocery store and earn it. But when mom and dad just bring it to work and give you a sign-up sheet and you feel obligated, and they always say, don't feel obligated, and then they come to you, you haven't signed up yet. Did you want to get the cookies? Deadline's Friday. And then the deadline's always extended a week. So it's all, you know what it is? It's all a big cookie scam.
You know what would have been good is if they did something like those Knott's Berry cookies that have the shortbread with the raspberry jam in the middle. Those are pretty good, I will say. I'll take that kind of fruit in my cookie.
Okay, and one other thing, Aaron, not to try to inject anything more newsy into this.
Okay.
But I hear you go to the traffic report, and the first thing they say is we're a boat down again on Edmonds Kingston.
Man,
our ferry system is in shambles right now.
The Edmonds Kingston run, like the last week, has been brutal. I've heard like 4 or 5 hour waits.
Yes.
Insane.
And first of all, you can drive around in just over a couple hours. And, you know, it's tough getting over the South Center Hill, but you can drive around in less than a 3 hour wait, which they're making people do for the boats. But it's just outrageous that they cannot keep that thing staffed. And I don't know, you know, they always say it's mechanical issues. Baloney. No way does a boat have that many mechanical issues. You want to see mechanical issues? Wait until Jay Inslee gets the all-electric ferry fleet in here. Then we'll have mechanical issues. But right now, they just don't have workers. They got workers calling in sick. And if you have workers who don't want to work, then get rid of them and give the job to somebody else. But this idea that it's just gridlocked for all these poor people who are, you know, cross-sound commuters, it's every single day, it's something else. It's got to stop. Jay Inslee. Buck stops there. Do something about this. Okay, is that all we got here for now? We good? Okay, we're good. All right. But you know, seriously, if you don't want to work, quit your job. Don't keep soaking the taxpayers, calling in sick, all this other stuff. If you're not getting paid enough, then to do an honest week's worth for work for an honest week's pay, then find something else that you think better fits your skills. But this nonsense of state workers, I mean, it's part of the highway system. Can you imagine if any other part of our highway system, half it was closed down for much of the year, the way the ferry system is, and that everybody who's trying to drive on any stretch of highway has to sit and wait in traffic for a couple hours like you do on the ferry system? It's ridiculous. It's horrible management. Jay Inslee, he couldn't manage a two-car funeral, that guy. And then you got workers who don't want to work, and it's just it's a clown show right now. But I don't know how there haven't been heads rolling yet at the ferry system when something is that horrible, and it is horrible right now. Okay, what else do we got? Is that it? Yeah. Okay, with all that as mere prelude, let's get to the big lead.
The big lead. Top story.
I consistently said for the last 2.5 years that what we're doing to our kids in the schools would eventually be looked back upon as one of the great moral crimes of our lifetime. And I still believe that because of all the psychological and emotional damage that was done to kids. But also, we're now starting to see the educational damage. Our friend Lee Finna at the Washington Policy Center, she has been compiling studies from Ivy League institutions, from other reputable databases that are showing just how much kids in our state have absolutely suffered from the shutdown of the schools. Now, we knew this was all going to happen 2 years ago when the president of the state teachers union so nonchalantly said this about the fact that kids weren't learning anything.
Our kids are resilient. I think one of the concerns as a parent, we have concerns that, is my child falling behind? Well, my question will be, falling behind who? Across the country. Everyone has missed certain learning. So if everyone is, quote, behind, I guess no one is behind. And
wow. I mean, if everyone, that is how the head of the state teachers union, Larry Delaney, felt about your children, knowing that they were falling desperately behind. If everybody's falling behind, then no one's behind. What contempt they have. And apparently the head of the teachers union doesn't think school is worth anything, because if you can just throw away 2 years, even though it's the biggest line item in the state's budget. So now here are some of the stats that Lee Finn at Washington Policy has uncovered. One I've been telling you about: 52% of public school students cannot meet basic English standards. 70% of public school students cannot meet basic math standards. So what are the schools doing about that? Well, they want to just get rid of those tests because the test results are so horrible. Some of the other stats, though, low-income students are the most severely affected. And I'll tell you why. You know, momentum is a very real thing in physics and in life. If you have families that are well-to-do, in general, they've probably made good decisions to get into that position. And if you have families that are desperately poor, they often have made poor decisions to get to that situation. Well, you're not going to find well-to-do families saying, we're just going to let our kids fail. Because that's not how they got to be well-to-do in the first place. So they were forming parent co-ops, and they were hiring private tutors, and they had the financial resources to do things with and for their kids, and they were focused on it. The kids who have hit the hardest by the shutdown are low-income children of color. And that's a tragedy. It's absolutely despicable. There are public schools in the state were willing to throw away 2 years of education for the kids who are going to be the most impacted for a lifetime. We have 8,900 kids who didn't even pursue going to college, low-income kids in Washington, compared to the numbers that went to college in years past. So we got about 9,000 kids who otherwise would have gone to college, but they chose not to after 2 years of getting no education in this state. And then there's this one from Brown University. The average young child in Washington has had an IQ drop of 23%. 23%. So if you have an average kid with a 100 IQ, that kid is now at a 77, which is learning disabled. And if you have a pretty smart kid with a 120 IQ, that kid is now below average after a 23% drop. That's from Brown University. It's just, it's so sick what we've done to our kids. I talked to Lee Finnett from the Washington Policy Center, who compiled all these stats. I talked to her a couple of hours ago. And we talked about how they're trying to mask the problems, the massive problems, by just getting rid of testing. Chris Rakedahl told me his solution is, well, let's just get rid of the testing then. So we don't know how the kids are doing. I mean, it's crazy that that's the response to just how horribly we're failing our kids.
Well, it's exactly right, because the focus is on the adults protecting their monopoly system and not on what the children need to get out of it to succeed in their futures. The focus is all backwards and wrong. The purpose of education is to focus on the needs of the children, prepare them for their lives ahead, not to make excuses for failure. And those numbers come from the state-administered tests that the children take every year, and those results came from the November 2021 administration of the tests right after the COVID school shutdowns.
Last month, our superintendent, Chris Rakedahl, he did his State of the Schools address, and he said this.
We are talking about significant transformation of our schools that puts our students at the center of our decisions.
What? That takes a transformation? Putting students at the center of the decision-making? Shouldn't they always have been at the center? What in the world has been at the center of the approach, if not the students, prior to this?
Yeah, I think it's all the language of government officials trying to cover up for their mistakes. You know, it's easy to say student-centered, but you need to look at their actions, and their actions were not student-centered when they closed the schools for nearly 2 years. They knew at the time that the remote learning instruction was deficient, yet they continued the policy. Yeah. Washington was 47th in the nation in reopening its schools, while, you know, European countries opened their schools in person in September of 2020. That was a full year ahead of Washington State. So outrageous.
Our state was number 47 in getting kids back into the classroom. Did it help them in a public health standpoint? Not at all. Did it hurt them desperately educationally? Yes. And that's on Jay Inslee. Because now, kids cannot even meet basic grade standards, but they don't get held back. They are just moving them through. The schools are just moving kids up to the next grade, whether they can meet the most minimal standards for the grade they're leaving now, right? Just to keep their numbers going.
That is exactly right. When I was collecting this information, it occurred to me that, oh my gosh, they are treating all the children as, you know, Washington State has a policy of socially promoting children to the next grade, even if they haven't acquired the skills in the current grade that they will need to succeed in the success in the next grade. And that's their policy. And what they did is apply this policy on all the children, 1.1 million school children that did not get the skills they needed during that closed period of schools, nearly 2 years. Yeah. And so they just moved them through like cattle, like they don't really care about them.
Just move them through. That's what we're doing to our kids. Up next in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead. I told you so.
The other huge problem we have societally is the crime problem that's engulfed our state. We're on a record murder rate in the state. And there are a lot of good people who don't even want to consider a career as a police officer because there is such widespread disrespect. I've been talking about this for a long time. I have some proof of it. The sheriff in Spokane, his name is Ozzy Nezovich, and he was talking a couple of days ago about how gangs are just targeting cops now.
Some folks in our community that take real offense when we use the word gang, as if it's an indictment on all people of color. That is not the truth. When we use the word gang, we're talking about a specific criminal activity. And that's what gangs are. They are criminal organizations that do criminal activity. It has nothing to do with color.
But far beyond that, we have entire communities of people who have decided to make cops demons, evil, but the enemy. And that is why the crime problem is so desperately horrible.
And quite frankly, you cannot continue to demonize law enforcement and think this isn't going to continue. We're not the bad guys. The narrative is all we ever do is show up and kill people. That is false. That's statistically proven false. That's research proven false. And it's time for people to stop the demonization of your law enforcement.
And so I'm going to dare say something that is considered very politically incorrect these days. But because Dow Constein and Jay Inslee and Bruce Harrell, they want to let criminals just go free. They can commit horrible crimes, and they want them to go free. We've got the Northwest Bail Fund that wants horrible criminals walking free. We have mentally ill people who stab women and throw women downstairs. And they say, oh, give them $750 or $250 a day. $23,000. Let's reward them for assaulting women. It is time, as a society, that we get back to fully funding jails, get some real judges, except for the clown show, or instead of the clown shows of judges that we have now. It's time to start putting criminals back behind bars. And everybody's, oh, that didn't work. The war on crime didn't work. The war on crime was a billion times more successful than this wimpy, let's let criminals walk free, and we won't do anything unless and until they murder somebody. But until then, we'll let them kick women in the face and go free. What we need to do as a state, as a region, is we need to get our jails back up and functioning, and we need to put bad guys behind bars for a long, long, long time. And the sheriff in Spokane seems to agree with me on this one.
You know, what about the AG of the United States not be willing to say that violent crime is an issue yet? My answer back was, it's time for him to wake up. And it's time for him to realize that it's policy that's driving this destruction. Change the policy. It's not guns, folks. It's people behind the guns pulling the trigger. You start putting them in prison, this goes away.
Tell you what, when I'm governor in 2.5 years, we're going to put bad guys behind bars again in Washington. We're going to lock them up. And that is your Big Lead this hour.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
We're going to check the news for you here at the bottom of the hour. And then I'm going to go back to Port Townsend, the lady who has become national news because she told a 18-year-old with a penis that she didn't like him being in the women's and girls' shower room watching little girls take off their swimsuits. She's been permanently banned. He's raising money through a GoFundMe because he's such a hero now for being in the girls' locker room. And last night, something really interesting happened, and we'll talk once again with the 80-year-old woman, Julie Jaman. That is next, right after we check the news here on the Dory Monson Show. Tell you what, this mayor of Port Townsend is quite the guy, it sounds like, David Faber. He's the guy who is now using a slur that some people compare to the C word to describe some women in Port Townsend. Hey, David Faber, we have invited you many times to come on the Dory Monson Show. Nicole's been reaching out to you. You say that you're a lawyer before you became lawyer, mayor. I would think somebody with your legal training would have the guts to just have a conversation with a little old talk show host. I wonder where he went to law school. David Faber. I did not know this until just now. He went to Evergreen State. That's great. He went to Evergreen State College. Oh, my goodness. That's delightful. So there's a phrase called TERF, T-E-R-F. And apparently what it stands for is trans exclusionary radical feminists. And these are women who are believe in women's rights, but they don't fight for the rights of biological men who say they're women. They believe, for instance, college swimmers. You have women competing against Leah Thomas. And anybody who objects to that is known as a TERFer. And it's become such a derogatory phrase that there are some who say that it's like using the C word. And apparently this Evergreen State educated mayor of Fort Townsend, David Faber, apparently he uses that phrase a lot on his Twitter page in an effort to just try to degrade women who he disagrees with. Now, this all started with a woman named Julie Jaman, who about 3 weeks ago, she was at the YMCA pool. She's 80 years old, Julie is. She's 80 years old, and she was at the YMCA pool. She gets out. She hears a man's voice in the women's shower room. She's naked. She looks out, and she says she sees a person with a penis wearing a women's swimsuit. And they're with little girls who are taking their swimsuits off to go to the bathroom. And she yelled at this person, "Get out of here!" Which is, I would think, a pretty understandable instinct if you saw somebody with a penis watching little girls take off swimsuits. But because of that, a Y employee came in and told her that she was transphobic. They told Julie Jaman. That she was the hateful one because she just thought she was protecting these little kids from, like I said, an adult male with a penis. Watch them. Now, it turns out this person was a Y employee and was actually chaperoning these kids. I would love to talk to the parents of those little girls and see if they knew about this and if they're okay with it. But Julie, last night, she got a permit to have a little press conference, public rally at a park in Port Townsend. And that's when a huge crowd of people, many of whom appeared to be with Antifa, came to shout her down. How big was the crowd there opposing you last night?
It looked huge from my perspective. I've heard or maybe read, maybe there was maybe upwards of 100 people. I don't really know. And if that includes... Since the transgender rainbow people were in no way under control and the cops refused to do anything about it, so when you mix up all those people and all the people that had come to the news conference from long distances all over, there may have been a few hundred people there. I don't really know.
And she says that the crowd was hostile, that they even physically assaulted
her. This was an organized news conference, and what you heard was lightweight compared to what then continued to happen and got much worse. The group in their rainbow designs and coverings and so on had flagpoles. I was jammed in the back by a flagpole by one person. I think that happened to others. They were mobbing. They just came right into the middle of this large group that was there, permitted to be there, and rode bikes in just incredibly dangerous ways, knocking people down. Then they came in even closer and screamed and yelled. They assaulted people. Several women were pushed to the ground. There was one man that was, or maybe two, that seemed like what I think were agent provocateurs. They were looking to make violent things happen. There were men dressed in black with black face masks on. I don't know if this is what they call Antifa, right. But they were very menacing. I didn't see them do anything, but there they were.
80-year-old Julie Jaman, and I asked her because she called the person with a penis he. She used male pronouns, and that is, when you misgender somebody, that's considered by some to be hate speech. They say that you are engaging in hate speech just by not using this person's preferred pronouns. What do you say to that?
I do not accept any ideology of any sort, including this transgender ideology that has a language all of its own. I learned to speak the English language. I know male and female sex, and I know how to use pronouns properly.
And now the mayor of Port Townsend, David Faber, he's issued a proclamation saying that the Julie is the enemy. That Julie, as long as she doesn't use the language that she is ordered to use, that she's not welcome in Port Angeles. I don't know how or why the government should be allowed to order you how you must speak, what words you must use, how you must feel about things. That, to me, sounds about as un-American as it gets.
We're rapidly in decline. And what was happening to us yesterday is the way fascists operate, and by any means necessary. And I personally am being blocked from access at any of my attempts to speak to City Hall, any people at City Hall, obviously at the police department, obviously at the Dove House that advocates for people who are victims of assault. All my phone contacts, written contacts, no response. I am not allowed, apparently, to speak to anybody.
Port Townsend doesn't sound like a safe place for people who welcome free speech and believe in the First Amendment with David Faber as its mayor. Now, David Faber, you are invited to come on this radio show, and you can certainly have a conversation with me and rebut anything that I say. But as long as you are the mayor of Port Townsend, Washington, it does not sound like a safe place for free speech. The invitation is open. I hope you'll take me up. In fact, I'm gonna tweet at him right now during this commercial. See if we can get the mayor to come on with us. Maybe by tomorrow. All right, and Awesome Audio is coming up next here on the Dory Monson Show. Okay, Nicole, I just texted the mayor in Port Townsend, or tweeted. I tweeted him during the commercial.
You did?
Yeah, you're good at this. You're the best at getting people to come on. So I hope.
Yeah, well, he did tell us he wasn't available. I forget which days, so I'll check. Maybe there's some days that opened up for him this week.
Well, it was very nice. I said, Mayor David Faber, I've been talking a lot about your town of Port Townsend. We've offered an open invitation to you to come on the show and discuss these issues. Please come on and we'll talk. Very nice.
I agree. That was well said.
Yes. So I'm hoping Mayor David Faber will come on. Now, this will be quite a battle of the minds. I got my Ron Bailey School of Broadcast Education. He's got his Evergreen State education. We'll see. We'll see who prevails in that mano a mano battle. Okay, if that is your prelude, let's get to our favorite sound bites of the day.
This is Dory Monson's Awesome Audio Clips of the Day.
Okay, Biden's COVID czar, Ashish Jha. Remember the standards: 15 feet, you stay away from people, or 15 minutes. And keep a 6-foot distance. And that's how you can stay safe from catching COVID, right?
CDC guidance sort of relaxes a lot of the restrictions we've had. tells us that there's a really new way of thinking about who is going to get infected. We used to spend a lot of time talking about 6 feet of distance, 15 minutes of being together. You know, we realized that's actually not the right way to think about this. That's not the kind of the most accurate way to think about this. What we know about this virus, particularly these very contagious subvariants that are out there right now.
Wait a sec. So when they were telling us this 2 years ago, they said it with absolute certainty. I even remember Fauci going, oh, if somebody sneezes, it's like, gee, they spit it out, but it doesn't go more than 6 feet. And that's why we're doing this. And now they're saying, oh, that was all wrong. They were talking like it was absolutely certain when they were turning the world upside down. And then he said this today.
Right now, we have 400 to 500 Americans still dying every day. If everybody was up to date on their vaccines and people got treated with Paxlovid as they're supposed to, deaths would go to close to zero across America.
Well, aren't some people who are dying vaxxed and boosted? It's not stopping the deaths from happening. What? Man, are these all in the pocket of the pharmaceutical companies? Every one of these government officials of ours? All right, and then you got Joe Biden, who signed the $740 billion Inflation Reduction Act, which they all admit will not reduce inflation. Ironic, given its name. But, oh, what it will do.
The Inflation Reduction Act invests $369 billion to take the most aggressive action ever in confronting the climate crisis and strengthening our economic, our energy security. It's going to offer working families thousands of dollars in savings by providing them rebates to buy new and efficient appliances, weatherize their homes, get tax credit for purchasing heat pumps and rooftop solar, electric stoves, ovens, dryers. It gives consumers a tax credit to buy electric vehicles or fuel cell vehicles, new or used. And it gives them a credit, a tax credit of up to $7,500. If those vehicles were made in America.
Yeah, by the way, and Chevy and Ford just announced today, he just said a $7,500 tax credit to get an electric vehicle. They just announced they're raising electric vehicle prices about $7,500. So, and then for all the other stuff. So you have to flip all your appliances, get a $15,000 appliance package for your kitchen, but they'll give you a couple thousand bucks back. You'll save $100 a week on gas, but you're going to have to buy a $60,000 electric vehicle to get that $1,000 in savings. And then this is just a flat-out lie. The Congressional Budget Office knows that this is a lie.
I'm keeping my campaign commitment. No one, let me emphasize, no one earning less than $400,000 a year will pay a penny more in federal taxes.
That's a lie. Taxes will start hitting people who make over $20,000 a year. So how do they call this? Here's his advisor. How do they call this inflation reduction when it doesn't reduce inflation?
He passed a bill called the Fill Every Pothole Act. I mean, voters should expect you to fill every pothole. I mean, so should voters measure the success of this bill on how much you reduce inflation in the next couple of years?
So this bill spins out over several years. And so the tax provisions, for example, some of the tax revenue will happen immediately.
They got nothing. They got absolutely nothing. It is another nearly $1 trillion scam just to get more of our money. Oh, and wait until they hire those 76,000 new IRS agents. Oh, and they got ammo, too. They bought lots of ammo for those IRS agents. I don't know why they have to come to our homes armed when they audit us, but they are ready. It's on. Okay, I got to get out of here. John Carley and Sherry Elker show's coming up next. God bless you in these crazy times. I'll see you back here tomorrow. High noon. Hello.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.